Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. And today we have John, who's joined us all the way from New Zealand. So John, why don't you introduce yourself?
First off, Leticia, thank you for having me on the show and to everyone listening. Yeah, I'm John Templeton. I'm a coach and author, just finished writing my book. It's called Authenticity, The Art and Science of Being a True Self. And I've achieved lots in my life. I'm a Guinness World Record holder. I've done well financially. I was a physical training instructor for the Special Forces, the New Zealand SAS. And all of that's well and good, but the greatest achievement I've had is overcoming survival mode, you could call it, an identity crisis, a full-blown existential crisis. And so that's really where my book was born out of, was getting through that, figuring out who I am, the authentic version of myself, and getting really clear on what my life is about, what inspires me, and what my purpose here is.
I love it all. And, you know, our journeys often lead us to our purpose in life. So how would you describe survival mode?
It's a really good question. And when you asked me before I jumped on air, I was wondering how I would describe it. I can definitely describe my experience of it. To define it would be, you know, it's a state of being that we're in and we're not in control. Our emotions are actually controlling us, you know, and that is based on survival, obviously, survival mode, but it's based on the animalistic part of ourselves trying to, I'm going to say, avoid pain, which is stress of some kind, our fears, not feeling good enough. It's us trying to avoid that and attain something that's going to bring stability to our being. So maybe we're in survival mode because we've gone through a relationship and that's really attacked our confidence and our self-worth. Maybe we've been the one that's been broken up with, or maybe the other person's done something that's really made us reflect on or feel bad within ourselves. Maybe it's financial stress. For me, it was a bit of both. And your system doesn't really know what to do. And so our mind kind of switches off and our emotions take over. And I say that emotions are just a primitive way of meeting our needs. And we act in a way like an animal to try and get safety and stability within our lives.
I love that, and I think it's an accurate description of that state. So tell us your story to and through survival mode.
To be honest, I can't say when it officially started, and I can say when it officially ended, which is a part of the story I look forward to telling. But really, survival mode started for me, I think, around when I started to open myself up to spirituality, because all of a sudden it was about looking inside. And I started looking inside and realizing that the voice in my head driving me to do things in my life, be successful as an athlete, as an example, that was running me, but it wasn't truly who I was. And so my relationships at the time, I was very competitive as an athlete and quite successful financially, but my relationships would suffer. And I realized it was because I was so competitive as a person, but I lacked compassion. And so my relationships would suffer, but my business, let's say, would thrive. And so I started to go, well, maybe I need to be more compassionate. So I started to be more compassionate, but then I would find myself being less competitive. And it was like I was on these scales of I want to say masculine and feminine energy, yin and yang energy. And it really started to create an identity crisis within me because I started to go, well, who am I? Am I a competitive athlete or am I a lover, loving, nurturing partner? And I went into a relationship not long after that, and I carried into it compassion, too much compassion. I became a people pleaser. I started to overgive, and this other person took advantage of that. She had her own things going on, granted, and I don't blame her. I just overgave. I should have cut things off earlier, but I didn't. And one thing led to another. My wealth, I just sold a gym. I owned a gym. I'd sold a gym. All that money was gone. My health really started to decline. I lost 10 kilos of weight. I went ghost white. I couldn't drink water without vomiting. I had warts growing on my body. I went to the doctor. I had cameras down my throat, up my backside, x-rays on my stomach. I was in hospital on and off for a few months. And they couldn't figure out what was going on. So I eventually went to a naturopath, and the naturopath said, "Are you under any stress?" And I started crying and I said, like, you wouldn't believe this relationship I'm in is sucking the life out of me. Long story short, I finally got up enough courage to end the relationship. And after I ended the relationship, I got some stability back, but I was still really lost and confused. My identity was shattered. My self-worth was at an all-time low. My finances were gone, my health was gone, I had to stop competing as an athlete. And I was just a shell. I was a shell of a human. And if anyone hasn't experienced a real existential crisis or an identity crisis or a spiritual awakening, it was like I was drunk. I couldn't tell the difference between up and down, left and right. I didn't know which direction to head in life. I was so lost. And that went on for a number of years. I then got into coaching, thinking that creating this new identity around being a coach would help me find stability in my life. And it did a little bit. I started to do quite well as a coach. I started to speak publicly and run events, started making money again, and it felt great. But then this is when round two started, because really I was just covering up what was lying beneath. I hadn't healed, I hadn't gone through my healing. So although I was successful, afterwards, I looked back and I saw that success was nothing more than a mask to validate me, to gain stability in my life, to have money. When the COVID thing happened, I had events and retreats I was running, all of this money I had put out to run these events and retreats, but I couldn't run them and I couldn't get my money back and people wanted refunds. So I've just found myself in this financial hole. I couldn't afford the lifestyle I'd built. And the same thing happened again. I started to crumble. I started to go into a deep depression. And so for the last sort of 3 years, I was just chronically depressed. My self-worth was so low. I couldn't get an erection as a man because I felt so much shame in my body. And I cried a lot. I just cried and cried. At first, I was angry. It turned into sadness. It was depression. I looked at suicide as the only way out. But that pain is also what drove me into. I wanted to know why I wanted to commit suicide. Like, what was inside of me that felt so depressed and ashamed? And that drove me to research philosophy, psychology, and theology, which is actually what enabled me to pull myself out of that hole.
Thank you for your honesty about your journey, right? I think a lot of people can relate to that. I want to first start with what you said about your lack of compassion. And I've talked about this a lot on this podcast, and I think the world would be a much better place if we had a lot more compassion. What do you think was the core of why you lacked compassion in the first place?
The strategies I had used to get praise from my parents growing up were to be successful. And I think it is normal for an athlete to lack a bit of compassion because you're literally trying to beat another person. And so if you have compassion for them, you might not be a great athlete. So my strategy for getting validation from my parents early in life, my identity was built around being successful, whether that was competitively as an athlete. I grew up in England. I was a great football player, soccer player. And really, I see competition and compassion, they're like two sides of a seesaw. And obviously, a balance of both is really what we want to aim for. But because I'd validated myself and built my identity around competition so strongly, it's like the compassionate side of my seesaw, I just disregarded it. I didn't need it because that didn't, my parents loved me, let's say, whether I was compassionate or competitive. So I just really leaned on being competitive, being a winner, being a champion, being a victorious, you could say. And so it just didn't even enter my awareness. That trait of compassion, I shut down, didn't need it. I just didn't need it. All of my needs were met through being competitive. But it wasn't until later life when you actually have to think about other people, that's when compassion comes in, right? And I hadn't, my whole life, I hadn't expressed that trait. I hadn't practiced being compassionate. And so I had to relearn. And I went too far. I became too compassionate and started to people please and be altruistic. And that worked to my detriment. So it was this balancing act of getting the seesaw right so I can now be happily married in a beautiful relationship and have compassion for my partner and the people I work with, but also maintain that element and edge competitively in business. Competitiveness is important. Yeah, that's competition met my needs, so that's what I stuck to until it failed to work.
And I love how you talked about that there has to be a balance. And oftentimes in life, with just about anything, we struggle with finding the balance until we're hit with some sort of consequence. The consequence for you was the stress. And you said, you lost weight, you had warts growing on your body, you were very like ghost white. A lot of people are unaware of the residual impact of stress and also the residual impact of trauma, which is one of the reasons why I started this podcast. The way stress shows up in our body is something that we aren't taught how to be able to identify. Like we tend to have gastrodigestive issues, we tend to have issues with headaches and, you talked about not even being able to keep your water down. Those are pretty extreme signs of stress that had you been able to identify, probably you could have addressed the stress, or maybe
Undoubtedly.
not.
No, there's no chance in a million years I'll ever let myself get there again because I now know, I write about it in my book that all physical ailments are really a reflection of stress. If we are stressed in life, our nervous system is going to be in a sympathetic state. We're not in our healing mode. Our body can't rejuvenate and rebuild, and eventually something is going to break. And I look back at how I was then, and yeah, that would never happen now because I know what I know. But I believe, and maybe we have different beliefs, but I believe that all we can heal all physical symptomology through psychology, through our mindset, balancing our perceptions, balancing our mind, balancing our emotions, centering ourselves, living a life that we love, following our aspirations, having meaning in our life. If we can do that, 90% of symptoms go. Then about the worst it gets is chapped lips and maybe you stub your toe. That's kind of it. But as far as chronic stress and illness and diseases go, those things, your body knows how to heal when it's given the right environment. And I definitely learned that the hard way.
I agree with you. Everything starts with our mindset, right? When we're in a better state of mind, we pay attention even, right? Like when we are chronically stressed, like you think I'm worried about the fact that my gut is not right. No, I'm not. Like I'm worried about everything else, and that's where my focus goes. And as you know, where your focus goes, that's where your energy goes as well. So you stay distracted from what could change your life if you addressed it. But I think the other thing is, most of us are just not aware of how stress shows up for us. Most of us are not aware of how even trauma shows up for us. So we just live day to day thinking that everything's okay, even though we're experiencing these ailments. It doesn't come down to us. It's not us, that's the problem. You know what I mean? And so when we are able to address our mindset, even with something as simple as losing weight, it's that is a mindset issue, right? Like as someone, I used to be 400 pounds. And I remember someone saying, when you get comfortable with yourself, when you get happy with yourself, you're just going to drop the weight. And at first, it didn't make any sense to me, right? But it was once I worked on my self-worth, once I worked on my mindset, once I worked on these things, the weight became a priority, because before that, I wasn't prioritizing myself. I wasn't prioritizing my health. So, yeah, mindset makes a huge difference. When I talk about accident survival mode, I say there are three phases. The first phase is self-awareness, right? We can change what we can't see. The second phase is reprogramming. And that is all that mindset work, changing the narratives that we hold on to, changing the stories that we tell ourselves, getting really honest with where we are in life. Now, you mentioned, and I believe that survival mode happens in waves, right? You can come out and go right back in. You mentioned when COVID happened, you started going back. And, would you say at that time your worth was aligned with your wealth?
Yeah, it absolutely was. That was my attachment, was my finances. The first thing I want to say is congratulations on losing the weight. Yeah, that's fantastic. And the fact that you realize it is a reflection of your psychology, power to you and power to everyone listening. My self-worth was in my book, I talk about self-worth and self-esteem. So I think every human being has self-worth. You do. It's just if you have a soul, which you do, you have self-worth. Nobody, nothing can ever take that away from you. You are so unique. You are so special. You are so important. The world needs you. And there is nothing that can ever happen to you that can take that away from you. So self-worth is ever present. It comes from your soul. Self-esteem is what I believe fluctuates. And my self-esteem was tied to my finances. And so when my finances came down, my self-esteem came down with it. And it wasn't until I became aware, your three stages. Stage one, become aware. That's absolutely the first stage of anything for anyone, is you don't know what you don't know. And most people go through life, I want to say, unconsciously. So they're unaware of what's actually driving them. I'm a victim to that. You are, everyone is, but there are degrees to our awareness. And so this is when meditation became a key part of my life. I sat and meditated and started to become aware of what am I thinking? What am I feeling? They're the two things happening inside of me, and the only two things that I can control in my life. Because when I change what I think and I change what I feel, that's going to change how I act, and that's going to change my life. So I say there are four aspects of a pattern of behavior. There's a thought, a feeling, an action, and an outcome. And what's happening inside of us is our thoughts and feelings. What's happening outside of us is our actions and outcomes. And so it's our personality, which is our thoughts and feelings, that creates our reality, which is our actions and outcomes. And so I just sat in meditation, a lot of meditation, and I said, what am I thinking? And I started to really, this is how I got out of being heavily depressed. This is how I was having panic attacks most days at night. That's when the panic attacks and anxiety would come. I would wake up with nightmares, cold sweats. And it was through meditation that I was able to discern the difference between my thoughts, which is my programming, all of my past, my emotions, and my authentic self, my soul. And it was through meditation that I gradually was able to uncover what am I scared of? And one of the big things I was scared of was having no money. One of the biggest fears I had was not because I couldn't sustain myself, but because my point of validation, which was my big emotional wound. I say there are four core emotional wounds. Validation was my big one. That I realized that money was filling that gap. And I was so petrified of who I would be without the money. But it was through meditation and contemplation that I really started to let go of that attachment. And I had this beautiful meditation where the realization came through that even if I was dirt broke, even if I was poor, I could still get up and make you smile. I could still get up and bring me to the table. And that was a really liberating moment. And it took a few meditations to really break the attachment. But eventually I got to that point where it was my financial position could be high or low. It could fluctuate, but it wouldn't have a bearing on my identity, and it wouldn't have a bearing on my self-worth or my self-esteem. I knew who I was, and so it was that process. And I think you'd put this in maybe your stage two is like the reprogramming process. I do it through meditation and contemplation, two sort of different aspects. And it is about becoming aware, what are our attachments? What are our emotional reactions? And I've created a whole model for this. It's called the map of emotion. It's what my book goes into in detail. It's so people can look at their thoughts, see which emotions they're feeling, and then break down why they're doing what they're doing. Like, look at your life. This is going to be a reflection of your thinking. And so I just took myself through that process of going, I filtered every thought I had, every emotion I was experiencing, and I filtered them all through using my true self, my authentic self, and cleared out all of the nonsense. And that eventually, that process I took myself through eventually turned in my book, which is a it's got some heavy information in there, but it's a step-by-step process for someone to be able to go. There's journaling questions where people can start figuring out who am I, who am I not, what are my thoughts and emotions that are inauthentic, what is the authentic part of me, and start letting go of the things that are holding them back so they can step into that next level of empowerment within their life.
You brought up so much things, but I want to touch on two things in particular. For me, one of the greatest gifts of becoming a coach, in my opinion, was that understanding of the thoughts, feelings, actions, and outcome. I never understood how powerful my thinking or my em how my emotions led my thinking and my actions, and had been able to see that connection actually change my life. It had me looking crazy sometimes because I would literally out loud challenge the thoughts that came into my mind. I would be like, "Not today, girl." Walking on the street, because it was that reconciliation of I don't need to have this thought. And I think a lot of people don't recognize that our thoughts are recycled day to day. We recycle 95 to 96% of our thoughts. And if we aren't challenging them at any stage, We aren't gonna change in any way, right? Like our actions are gonna stay consistent with that. Our emotions are gonna stay consistent with that. But once you are able to start challenging your thoughts, challenging your emotions, you will see a difference in your actions and your outcomes just with that. That part right there is amazingly life-saving. And the second thing that I want to mention is you talked about like one of your deepest fears was being without money. One of my deepest fears was being homeless. And I did any and everything to avoid that. I would work five jobs, I would do this, and I would do this. And immediately after COVID, after there was a while after COVID, there was a ban on evictions in England. And once there's evict that ban was lifted, it was like everybody got evicted because people wanted their places back and all of that. Like life had changed, right? I ended up homeless and I did everything in my power to avoid this biggest fear. But what I will say is, I found myself when I had to face my biggest fear, when my biggest fear became my reality, something that I had to face every day, something in me changed fundamentally. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful. Yeah, it was stressful. I ended up being homeless for over 2 years and I turned lemon into limoncello. We end up traveling full time for 2 years, my family and I. But in that process, it allowed me to see that even when faced with my biggest fears, my world did not have to become a fallen deck of cards. Like you can build a house out of cards. My life didn't have to become the wreckage of that house of cards. I had control and I changed the narrative. How do you think you being faced with your biggest fears was able to impact the way that you show up today?
I think you nailed it with what you said. And this is why I encourage people to face their biggest fears. I don't believe we can be authentic if we don't, because our fear is just going to run us and we're not going to follow our true path. And so for myself, because we don't realize that we're controlled by our emotions, we just don't know. We think it's normal, but it's not normal. And so each and every day, a lot of people get up and go to work in a job they don't like. Madness. It can be a means to an end, but that's not the end. That's just a part of your story. And so well, I had to really reflect on that and I sat with it. And once I had gone through these meditation processes and really felt okay with no money, my money kept dropping, but I stayed inspired because it didn't define me. And so after that, I feel like it's like an egg. And the shell is our protective ego. The white bit is our emotion, our fear, and the yolk is who we truly are, our soul. And life cracked the shell open big time. And I was resisting. I was trying to put the shell back together again. But then when I started to surrender into it, it's like I got through that fear. And then I found myself. I found myself through that process. And so the way I can show up now is much more authentically. It's not like I have to project this image of success, project this image of wealth, project this image of anything. I can show up as me, say what I want to say because it's who I am, and that's freedom. So I get to be free, and I hope, other people permission to be free as well, to be inspired, to follow their path. Yeah, what can I say? After going through it, you'd know all about it. You just feel good within yourself.
You've mentioned authentic self several times, and the third phase of accident survival mode, in my opinion, is reinvention. But I don't think it's a reinvention from scratch. It is being able to pick the elements that were working for you prior to survival mode amplifying that, but also stripping yourself back of the expectations. Sometimes redefining success is involved, aligning with your values, your core values, instead of being anchored to what is expected from you societally or from your family, I think is key. How has anchoring into your authentic self shifted the way you view the world?
The first word that comes to mind is freedom. And that's freedom to be who I was born to be, who I am. And my definition of the authentic self is the soul and the authentic self to me are the same thing. And that aspect of us doesn't actually have any values. It's just awareness, it's consciousness, it's presence itself. And then we have what I would call intrinsic values, and they're our true values, which are our idiosyncratic ways of being. My hairdo and your hairdo very different, but we've chosen them with degrees of free will. So to be authentic is to have free will and to choose freely what we do. And then there are extrinsic values, like you mentioned, which are other people's opinions, society, who I have to be loved, who I have to be safe, who I have to be to fit in. And so, getting to the root of that authentic self, it's like a stillness within that never changes. If you or anyone listening, if you remember even your earliest memories, you would have been a very different person back then. But there's a feeling of you, there's a feeling of Letitia that's always existed. Every day you wake up, it's the same feeling of you. And if you go back to your earliest memory, maybe a good one, maybe a bad one, that feeling of you inside, that awareness, that's been there the whole time. And I say that's the authentic self, that's the soul, that awareness. And then we build a value system on top of that awareness. And part of that value system is who we truly are, because they're the things we love as an end within themselves. We're just inspired to do certain things. And then there's the extrinsic values, which is the junk everyone else is throwing on top of us. And by going through our fears, facing our fears, really, I say facing the eight core emotions. Once you get through those eight core emotions, you're no longer dragged by your attachments, your resentments, the external world. Motivation disappears, inspiration comes online, and you emanate a loving presence with everything you do, and that carries into your work, into your family. So life is very freeing. And I want to say peaceful. That doesn't mean you're not working hard, doesn't mean you're not having challenges in your life, but you just know who you are beyond that. You know that there's an immortal aspect of yourself which can't be controlled, which is really free to curiously explore and create in the world. Free to create. Yeah, it's like you become an artist, and the canvas that you paint on is the physical world. And so you just get to spread your art everywhere you go.
I love that, how you I love how you said that. I think a huge part of accident survival mode is being able to take radical ownership of yourself, and in that you get to create a world that is right for you. And I think sometimes, we have to be grateful for the journey because of what we are able to gain along the way. So, John, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Can you tell us how we can find you online?
Yeah, absolutely. My website is johntempleton.io. So johntempleton.io. I got a free newsletter if you'd like to join. My book's coming out shortly. So that's that. And then I'm on predominantly Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And my handle for all of them is John Templeton Official. So yeah, find me there and connect with me there.
Okay. I'll make sure all of that information is in the show notes. So before we wrap it all up, one key takeaway for the audience to action.
Put a timer on your phone for 10 minutes. Set an alarm for 10 minutes and sit on a seat, the side of your bed, somewhere where you're free from distractions, where you're free from the noise of the world. If there's anyone around, tell them you're going to be busy for 10 minutes. Sit down and close your eyes and feel what's going on inside your body. feel what's going on inside your body and notice if your mind starts to think about things, if you think this is stupid, if your mind wanders, if you think about what you have to do next, if you're worried about what other people think, just notice what's going on inside you. That is my action step. And the reason I say it's the most important place to start is, as we both said, until we're aware of what's happening inside of us, our life is just, we're going to be robotic. And so the very, very first step is like, have you even stopped to look inside? Because that's where I believe that masterful people focus on what they can control. Majority of people focus on what they can't control. And when you really dive into what you can control, there is only one thing you can control, which is your thoughts. And until you really focus all of your awareness and attention on your thoughts, your life is, you're not really in control of your life. And so this is the first step of starting to figure out what's going on inside your head. Spend 10 minutes with yourself, just having a look inside. It can be a bit scary and daunting, but the other choice is you let it run you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I think so many of us have to learn how to be present and be. And I think that is a great advice. So thank you, John. Thank you so much for your time on Survival Mode Disrupted. Listeners, thank you for catching another episode. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive, disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Letitia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose, because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth: you're not broken, you're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it, don't numb it, move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.